Welcome to Horns Up. I'm Animesh.
And I'm Peter.
And yet again, we're talking to the Demon Stealer, Sahil Makhija. Welcome back, man.
Hey guys, thanks for having me as always.
What did you have for dinner?
I had, it was a mix of leftovers that will be too elaborate to explain.
No, man, please. I'm interested, actually.
Please. We need...
No, I'm genuinely saying that because I enjoy your food eating videos.
Right. So, I had some... Well, it all started with ordering something called a charcoal chicken on the weekend.
Fuck, and, that sounds good.
And a Turkish soup from one of this new Persian home delivery services that has opened up. So I thought I would make dal rice and eat charcoal chicken for lunch with that. And that was the plan. But Dipti ordered a burrito today, a chimichanga, which is a deep fried burrito. Okay. And she ordered a burrito bowl. So I ate half the chimichanga and I was full. So my lunch was deferred to dinner. So for dinner, I had the veg pulao with some of that soup, which I pimped up by adding some leftover chowli, which is black-eyed peas that my mother sent for Dipti's lunch, which she could not finish, along with a piece of the charcoal chicken. So,
and that, my friends, is the jibber-jabber from Headbanger's Kitchen.
Dude, I wish my my food life was as exciting as yours is.
Go live with Sahil.
Honestly, it can be. You just have to mix everything that's left over in the house and make sure you have meat for every single meal.
Yeah, that actually I kind of try and do. Yeah, but we're not here to talk food, only food as such. Although I would love to just chat with you about food because, we're here actually because you've got a new EP coming out. It's called The Holocene Termination. Yes. How excited are you really about the EP, man?
I mean, I'm always excited to put out new music. What's not exciting is looking at sales figures. but the process of putting out the EP is always fun. I enjoyed recording it. I enjoyed listening to the mixes and now obviously putting out the songs one at a time into the world.
And this time you're really hammering it in with all your tweets and stuff, saying that this is not crowdfunded, that you're looking to do a regular sales job of it, whatever regular means of sorts.
Yeah.
Why choose not to crowdfund it when and go down this route?
Yeah, so I guess a lot of it has to do with the fact that Wishberry shut down, first of all. So I'm kind of out of a crowdfunding platform to start with because as an Indian citizen, I cannot crowdfund on Kickstarter, nor can I use Indiegogo. So that kind of left me with an option of building my own crowdfunding sort of platform on my own website in minimal cost. And it wasn't really it didn't really make sense to me. I was I just open up pre-orders on Bandcamp and Red Wolf and, hope for the best. But I think that what I'm realizing is that, when you're not crowdfunding, I think that urgency of buying the EP or supporting the project is not there. So I think people are less enthusiastic about buying it for whatever reason.
Yeah, but so then I must ask you, you've got stuff like Bandcamp Friday happening for the last year and a half or so, right? And unlike most of the artists that released separate releases and stuff like that, you decided to do the complete opposite thing and put down all your music for free last year. So has any of that kind of what you've seen over the last year and a half had an impact on your decision to not crowdfund, or what is your results been, or what you've seen over the last year and a half from Bandcamp Friday? I'm very curious to know.
So again, because everything is up for free, it's not really changed much of anything for me, because I think when people discover, I have had a lot of people download for $1 or $5 or pay a lot less than normal, which is fine. But I think Bandcamp as a platform is one where people do value music. So it's not like, you know, once we set it up for free download, suddenly there were like a million downloads or anything. I guess everyone who had to pirate the album had pirated it, and everyone who had to, you know, buy it has already bought it, you know. And those who listen to it on streaming services, like even myself, I would just stream something rather than download it for free, because that's kind of how I consume music today. So it's not been any like major like sales or downloads or anything, but I mean, there is the constant discovery of the music. So there are occasional sales, there are occasional people downloading it for free or for cheap, but it's just something I wanted to do for people, you know, just because I knew that especially that first year finances were tight for a lot of people. And I'm sure there were enough people who were like, you know, I'll buy something later. And you know, now they couldn't. So hopefully it did help them and give them access to the music.
Just knowing you, and we've had this chat earlier too. I remember I first had it with you at this, at a gig at Hard Rock Cafe where you were, I think you and I were only like amongst the 10 people who had come out to watch, like a weird collection of black metal bands playing Hard Rock Cafe.
I
wasn't in Solar Deity at that time. Like, wow. I'd left the band at that time, but whatever.
Okay. Then it was Solar Deity, I guess. Solar Deity, and I can't remember who the other bands were.
A bald vocalist, like really powerful, like full muscles guy.
I can't remember right now, but
but that chat, and that's the first time I had this chat with you, where you said that essentially, dude, like you were just contemplating metal music and what you were doing in metal music in India at that time. And this was like God knows when. It's been already a couple of years, more 3 years or 4 years than that, even Hard Rock Cafe shut down, so it obviously had to be even earlier than that.
Yeah.
And just again, this is personal interpretation, right, of reading through your tweets, etc. It seems like at some level you're jaded with all this stuff that you have to do besides just making music. Is that like a fair assumption of sorts, or a fair reading? Are you jaded with whatever's happening?
Yeah, I guess no. I mean, I've been having the longest midlife crisis of any metal musician, I think.
When is the motorbike coming, Sahil? That's my question.
That's what I'm saying. See, other people get motorbikes during their midlife crisis. I hire drummers and other musicians and write EPs.
Didn't that excite you, the fact that you got to work with musicians that I'm assuming you were a fan of, the fact that you're still making music, etc.? Doesn't that like,
thing, like, no? Yeah, like, but again, like, at the end of the day, man, what do you want out of your music, right? Like, okay, there is a part of you that is like, yeah, okay, I want to make music, that's what brings me happiness. But at the end of the day, man, if you're just making music and sitting and you're the only person listening to it, it's not really, I mean, that's, you'll get some enjoyment, but you're like, I want people in the world to hear this. I want this music to spread. I want to have some kind of success. And unlike other musicians in the metal scene in India, I don't think anyone has dedicated their life to their music the way I have. You know, like, I'm not saying there are people who are not passionate or anything, but I definitely know that they've not like worked 15,000 rupee a month jobs to keep making music, you know, as a metal musician. Like, I know everybody in Sky Harbor has got, you know, proper jobs that actually pay their bills. And the other thing is, all these other bands have a progress chart, which you can see is improvement. Whereas for me, I feel like it has flatlined somewhere for whatever reason. And I guess maybe that's where all the jaded frustration has come from, you know, because when we started out, even with Demonic Resurrection, like, we were doing resurrection gigs with 400 people in the crowd. We sold, you know, 1,000 copies of The Return to Darkness. And like, generally, like, you feel certain things should get easier as you go along and not harder. Like, okay, it was difficult to book the first festival we played at. Great. 5 years later, it should be a little easier to book a festival, maybe to book a tour, maybe to get something. But like, all that difficulty continuing along with the constant lineup changes to a point where I don't have the will to even put out an announcement saying looking for band member anymore. Like, because I don't have the patience to catch a young musician, train him till he is at the level he needs to be to like have the best version of him in DR, and then have him realize that, man, there's no money here. I have to do something else to, you know, make a living. And unfortunately, for me, I've always pushed the sort of difficulty level of all the music that we do, which puts you in a spot where, like, the guys who are going to vibe with you on a say a mental level, like who you can actually hang out with and you can, you know, listen to the same music as you, they don't have the skill levels to actually fit in the band, you know. So I don't know if I've put myself in this position or if it's just the way things have gone. So whatever, I mean, I guess everything just starts to weigh you down at some point. And for the most part, I've tried to tweet and make as little drama about this as possible. But every once in a while, you know, the fingers slip up.
yeah. I mean, like, after a while, it's like, okay, what is up with Sahil, right? You want to just
I don't know, man. Like, genuinely, I want to understand from your perspective, why do you think the difficulties continue to exist for you?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Maybe maybe my music just sucks. Who knows, man? Like that, and that's the thing, right? Like, I wish I had answers. I wish someone could tell me that, hey, man, this is what you're doing wrong, because I'll work to fix it. Like,
you are an incredibly hardworking guy, man. Like, full respect to you for continuing to do what you do, but is the weird thing, no?
Yeah, and like, I wish, Nolan's a good friend of mine, and Nolan's always like, oh man, you know, I don't post anything about my music. Maybe you should just like not post. And, you know, like, more people will be interested if you don't post about it so much and let them discover it and all.
So the supply versus demand kind of thing.
I don't know. You know, maybe I'm putting myself out there too much. But again, then, you know, like, I've taken extended breaks from social media and tried to not post things, but I have not seen the like, I've literally tried everything. So at some point, you know, you just start to like wonder, like, okay, what is the problem? Or, you know, like, why am I not seeing? And again, I try and be as realistic as possible with my expectations. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not like, hey, man, I need to have 80,000 Spotify listeners like bloody wood. You know, that's not, I'm like, okay, I had 550, you know, when the album comes out, I'd like to get to 1,000, and I'd like to maybe stay at 1,000, 2,000, move up to 500 more after that and grow from there. And that is where, you know, I struggle. And then, because I guess of the work I do, I end up just sitting at home and I'm literally spending 8 hours just scrolling on Facebook, thinking of the next post to make, you know, what can I do to promote the EP? What can I do to promote the songs, etc., etc., etc. So, I mean, I guess it kind of then becomes this thing where if you're sitting on Twitter for so long, you post something because you're just like, man, how do I make a sale happen right now? Like, what can I do? Like, how many times can I post the same tweet, right?
How many times can you post like old pictures or certain things, right?
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason that I post so much and I post so many different things and I try everything from questions to throwbacks to rants to whatever, you know. And it's, I mean, and social media is also not making it easy, you know. Unfortunately, I don't think I am an artist that is like a Bloody Wood, for example, where there is a rabid fan base that just consumes and goes out there and just, you know, spreads their music as well, you know, so that they can relax a little bit more, probably, like, you know. I don't know, maybe I don't know.
Do you think this kind of fan base that you speak about, that Bloody Wood has now, do you think you had it like, say, 10 years, 20 years back? When Raz was happening, when Resurrection was happening, when Frozen Portrait was like the almighty song of the Indian metal scene, etc., etc.?
No, you know what? We never did. I don't think we ever did. We had a dedicated fan base at every given point. I think we were like the gateway band for people. So it's like, we listen to DR, we get into Indian metal, and then, oh, we realize, oh, Bhayanak Moth and Scribe are better. So, you know, forget, forget this band. Like literally, like, cause I remember like me and Mephisto, our constant, you know, thing used to be, man, everybody just comes up to us and says, respect DR, bro. Respect. Really, like, yeah. Respect, bro. And you'll see it, dude. Like, you if you see any of the NH7s, and I know at that point in time, we tried to throw it, not a tantrum, but, like, we definitely tried our best to, you know, alter the slots that we used to be given to kind of get a good slot. But literally, no matter what happened, every time we played with, like, BM and Scribe, you would see the venue packed for BM and Scribe, and whenever DR was on, it would be, like, half or quarter. You know, and I guess on some level, that is also just the fact that we don't make, you know, that groovy kind of metal that goes down well with people. You know, there's no, it's not
jump the fuck up music.
Yeah, but
I mean, it is what it is. Okay, yeah. Cool. Let's talk about Holocene Termination. What did you want to achieve with this EP?
Well, I actually, so it's a funny story, I guess. I can give you the exclusive.
Wow.
So yes. I actually started working on an album as soon as I finished The Last Reptilian Warrior. And I got some musicians together. And unfortunately, that was taking a lot of time to actually come together. So I was like, you know what, while I'm waiting for this album. Wait, to
come. Which musicians? Are you talking like Indian people, local people? Are you talking like, had you reached out to foreign musicians already, etc.?
Yeah. Similar people to who I currently work with and who I worked with on the previous record as well. So I don't want to name any names right now because then I'll lose this.
Okay, fine.
There was an album in the works and it was taking a lot of time because musicians are busy, musicians have things to do. I couldn't find some of the musicians that I wanted to work with, but I had certain ideas. So that project was taking way too long. So I was like, okay, you know what? Let me work on another EP. Let me work on something else meanwhile, because I got time. So I started working on this EP, and then this EP was taking too much time because I could not find few of the pieces I needed to finish the EP the way I wanted it. And so then I did And This Too Shall Pass last year.
Wait, I did so that. This you started actually a couple of years ago.
The process of writing new music started the moment The Last Reptilian Warrior was recorded. And
wow.
And yeah, once the work was done on that and it was released, I started writing songs. I started getting in touch with musicians. But the album that I was working on, I could not finish it. So I said, okay, let's start another one with less songs, because then that will be hopefully easier to finish quicker. Started that, but that also took long. So I was like, fuck it, I'm going to do an album where I play everything. So I'm not waiting for any musician to give me files or to, you know, have space in their schedule to record my stuff. So that's why last year I did And This Too Shall Pass. And then I got all my files together. And then this year got this EP together. And next year you should have some other stuff as well.
Wow. Cool. I'm glad like that
on fire, I must say.
Yeah.
Like, you're probably the most prolific Indian metal musician, right? At this point.
I don't know.
No, but that's this thing, right? Like, this... Dude, Sahil, why isn't this Sahil on Twitter, man?
I'm not supposed to give away everything right now.
No, it's not about you giving away everything right now. It's just, like this Sahil seems so confident about his music. This Sahil doesn't seem like he's clutching for straws for and asking for people to download or get or buy the music.
But
this again, Sahil
But that's what I'm saying. Like this Sahil doesn't need sales right now. This Sahil will need sales once the EP is out or once the album is out, because I got to pay all the musicians. Yeah.
So hopefully after listening to this episode, you get a bunch of more pre-orders.
I hope so. I mean, see, look, again, there are so many factors at play. I mean, every big band is also putting out albums and EPs, and like the music scene is saturated. So, I mean,
it's oversaturated, man.
Completely. I mean, like, yeah, literally everybody has an album out. Just this weekend, I think it was Artspire, First Fragment, Bellacore, and like some three other bands as well that put out albums. So, I mean, yeah, it's a tough gig for anyone, you know?
Yeah, and one of those bands was fucking Limp Bizkit, who put out an album that came out of nowhere, and idiots like me striving for the back, for the good old days, etc., looking for nostalgia, listen to the fucking Limp Bizkit album.
Can you imagine? Animesh found his like baseball hat and put it on.
Oh wow.
I kid. But tell us more about this. I mean, because like obviously like you've not like talked about this before and you're giving us the exclusive. So like tell us about this entire, because like last year you put out This Too Shall Pass.
Yeah.
And now this year in there. So what was happening in the last year? In there, other than just waiting for these musicians.
Yeah, I was taking Nolan's advice and not putting myself out there. So see if it works. Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, I'm just busy, man. Like, I try and keep as busy as I can. I keep having, like, I've got so many other songs that are also written and they're there and there's like stuff on this computer. But unfortunately, even like it's only so fast I can put it out, and then you have to have the whole, you have to like I said, you have to give the music the promotion and the push it deserves. Otherwise I'll just put up stuff and I mean it'll just like there'll no one listen to it, so what's the point then, you know? Like I'll be happy I made it, but then I'll be unhappy that nobody else listened to it.
Yeah, okay. But here's the thing, like I just read, and I'm glad at least you don't put out vinyl, because someone was saying like if you don't like record and give the vinyl to pre-order now, you won't get it before 2023, which is absolutely fucking ridiculous if you think about it, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts. The vinyl market has gone crazy.
Okay, no, I want to chat with you a little bit more about what you just said about releasing music, right?
Yeah.
Etc. And I'm drawing a very weird parallel here. Actually, it's not very weird. It's just a separate parallel here. I'm going into the world of art. Right, where artists, visual painters, etc., most of them, they have a very small fan base. Like it's only like a handful of people who'll actually pay for their stuff, right? Everybody else is just coming to maybe a gallery, observe, click a few photographs, or they're happy owning the poster rather than the actual artwork, right? What's your ideal here? Would you want to like be considered as an artist with a loyal fan base, or would you want your music to reach out to everyone that can possibly that you think should possibly own it?
I think any artist will tell you the same thing. They want their art to be consumed by as many people as possible. At the end of the day, it's not like I'm here like, okay, I want to find out how I can reach the most people. What music can I make to satisfy the audience? That's not what, you know, like I'm not saying you're doing that.
Please don't get me wrong there.
I'm not. I'm just saying like any artist wants their art to be consumed. Even those with a loyal following of whatever number, they all want growth. And any artist who tells you otherwise is lying. It's a guarantee. You know, yes, you can survive and you can manage with a small fan base. Like, and especially we're talking about art like paintings and all. First of all, every smaller piece has a much higher value than music does any which way, so it can survive probably with that. Yeah. You know? Similarly, yes, you know, it would be awesome if I had say 1,000 loyal fans who I knew were going to buy the EP or whatever.
You've read the Kevin Kelly article, right?
Every third YouTuber who teaches you how to grow your band, artist will tell you this 1,000 loyal fans following is what you're looking for, and while that's great, like that is what we'll be able to help you keep making the music, you know, which is what my crowdfunding was kind of doing. But I always crowdfunded much less money than I actually needed, but it was a good enough sort of thing to bank on. So, I mean, every artist will be happy to have that sort of fallback net that I know I have 1,000, 2,000, 1,500, 200 loyal fans who are going to buy everything I put out. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to reach more people and everybody would love to do it without compromising their art. You know, because the first advice anyone will give you when you say like, I'm not reaching people or whatever will be, you need to write different music or you need to try something different. But the fact is,
DJ Sahil,
not even DJ, it'll be like maybe write more current stuff, maybe have more modern influences, whatever the fact is, whether you are playing the most old school thrash or the most old school death metal or the most modern metal, there is an audience for all these.
Yeah.
When you peak at that audience, then like if you're a death metal band and you have literally reached every single death metal fan in existence and, you know, sold them your music, then you can say, okay, now I need to change because this is where the cap or the cutoff is, you know. Like, then I understand you're like, yeah, okay, I need to change, you know, like where Metallica went, maybe where, you know, where with Justice they had reached a point where they could probably not sell any more beyond that. But something like the Black Album followed by Load Reload broke their market out into the hard rock category and all that. But that's different. That's a level that we are not even going to be able to achieve in 100 years if we kept making music. But would like to reach somewhere on the way, you know?
Hmm.
Okay, let's segue into a track. Which one you want us to play?
Why don't you play the latest single and Epoch of Degradation with Christoph and Anton?
Fantastic. Okay.
We'll be right back.
So here we are, we're talking to Sahil Makhija, aka the Demon Stealer, about his new EP, The Holocene Termination, on which he's got a smorgasbord of musical guests and guest musicians. Sorry, not musical guests, guest musicians. Were you fans of all these people that you wanted to get?
Yeah, I don't approach people whose ability I'm not a fan of. You know, I only approach musicians whose work I actually like and I listen to.
Okay, for an absolute lay music fan, break down this process for us, na? Like, what does it take? Just a simple email to get things going?
Yeah, pretty much. It takes an email or a Facebook message or an Instagram DM. Depending on how popular the musician is, you know, you'll get a reply based on that. You know, so if they're really popular on Instagram or Facebook, it's probably harder to reach them because, you know, it'll go into their spam folder or something. But an email generally works.
Okay. And now let's try and break down, or at least what I want to try and understand is from the... again, from an audience point of view, when you hear that you're collaborating with people from Fleshcore Apocalypse or 6 Feet Under, right? There's this like, oh my God, he's fucking collaborating with somebody from 6 Feet Under and Fleshcore Apocalypse, right? Is it as cool for them to be collaborating with Demon Stealer or somebody from Demonic Resurrection as it is for us as just like fans from India?
I guess that's a question only they can answer, but I'm going to assume it's not. I mean, most of them probably don't have a clue who I am, you know, or they know me as the guy who keeps hiring drummers, you know.
But at least I must ask, what's the thing with drummers, Sahil? Let's be honest.
Like I said, some people buy sports cars, I hire drummers.
But like, you did an entire album with like... George Collier's, right? Which was fucking awesome. And then you did, who else? Then I think you had Louis
the
Rando.
Last Reptilian Warrior. And Louis Rando, I did the single with Louis and with Dan Presland as well. Yeah.
But that's what I'm trying to understand. Why drummers? Why not like get a lead guitarist or different lead guitarists on your track? Or is it just the way you write the music?
No, I guess I just love drums, man. Like, I guess something along the way, like, I mean, I always enjoyed playing the drums. That's why I was the drummer in Reptilian Death. And I've always been fascinated with blast beats and fast drumming. And since I could do neither of those myself as good as I would like, I guess I always looked up to other drummers. And, you know, and in India specifically, there have been almost no drummer that can reach the levels I sort of, you know, like a George Collier, you know, who I love Viru to death. He's an incredible drummer, but even he can't play George Collier's stuff. Like he can't play that. He can't play that 280 BPM. That's not his drumming, you know? So for me, it's just like those musical ideas that I would like to do. I've never found a drummer in India who can do it. You know, there are drummers who play fast now. Like there is, you know, Aaron and Mihir Bhende was there for a time. But like with the recording setup, with the chops as like that level, I mean, even they'll tell you they're not at the George Collier's level, you know. So I guess now, obviously, maybe in the next, you know, couple of years, there will be more extreme metal drummers. But like in India, drumming, a metal drummer has no future. So they, like, if they're doing music full time, they have to move over to Bollywood or some commercial thing. So at the end of the day, their extreme metal drumming is never going to be, you know, on par with anyone abroad who can actually make a living doing this. So at the end of the day, it's just like, I was like, yeah, man, I want to just someday have like these drummers play on my stuff. And I love playing drums myself. So like, it's just, yeah, I just got fascinated with it.
Okay, so when you reach out to these musicians and then you get them on board, you hire them to start to essentially collaborate with you, do you give them their parts as such, or do you get them to do the parts that you want them to do? What's like the briefing process like?
Right. So, I mean, it's kind of been different for each album, but as much as possible, I try and give them a blank canvas to work with so that they can, I feel that way that they're not bound by any parts that I have written or any pre programmed ideas, so to speak, you know, then they can really kind of be creative with it. And then we can discuss, you know, whether that creativity works for the song or, you know, what I was thinking or what I was not thinking, you know.
Mm. Mm.
So I think pretty much for all my solo stuff, I've given them just a guitar track and said, just, you know, put what you think will work and then we'll take it from there.
So essentially it's like hiring a freelancer or a gig worker.
Yeah, I mean, it is work for hire at the end of the day, you know. Like, I mean, they are creatively involved to some extent, but they are all paid a sessions fee for the work. And I think when you approach people with that directly, I think if there are a lot of musicians who are like, how do I collaborate? Forget collaborate. Think of who's available for sessions work. All you have to do is send a message saying, hey, are you available for sessions work? When are you free if you do sessions work? And what do you charge for a song? And that's it. Like, then they'll reply because it's work, it's business, you know.
Mm.
And then, of course, you can become friends in the process and all that, you know, that's a different thing.
So, wait, I must ask because I'm a fan. Is Kevin Tully been part of your list?
Not yet. I have a list of 100 drummers. I'm not even down to 50 of them.
Derek so, Roddy? Like, now I'm just going to go Derek Roddy.
I mean, he's on the list. Have I reached Derek Roddy on the list yet? I don't know. But he's on the list.
Awesome. So, I mean, you did get George Golias, right? And from your existing guest musicians, and of course, now you've already told us of the album, so I must ask you about that. Other than George Golias, right, which of the musicians, like when they responded to your email or DM on Instagram, where you were like, oh, fuck, this is real. Now I need to make this shit happen. And like, there.
I think almost like most of them, because like, first of all, by the way, there's a cool story for you. So actually, the album which George Golias played on was supposed to be him only playing on 2 songs, actually. That was my original plan. Okay. Like I did the last Reptilian Warrior with multiple drummers, like 5 drummers. That album, I actually was like, George, can you play 2 songs? And I was going to get another bunch of drummers to do all the other songs. And George actually was like, no, man, I want to do the full album if I do it. And that's why he did the full album. I was like, okay, cool. George wants to play on my full album. Me, George can play on my full album.
So, he's going to say no to that, right?
Yeah. And I guess Krim, when Krim replied, I was like quite happy, you know, because I think when I wrote to him, he had just kind of like, he had done, you know, Decapitated. He was joining Septic Flesh. So his profile was quite high, you know. So I was like, yeah, quite excited when he wrote back saying, yeah, sure. All of them actually, like I guess, so from the drummers, like Kevin was always advertising that he was available for sessions drumming, you know. So I knew that, like I knew he would take up the work if it was, you know, fitting. But like Krim never posts saying I'm available to do sessions work. So it was like, you have to like, okay, will he do it? You know, is he available? So that was, I guess, why maybe, you know, it was a little more like, oh, wow, Krim has replied and said, yes, he'll play, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's cool. I mean, like, Krim just played on Harakiri for the Sky album, right? And that's a fucking killer album. He really enjoyed it.
He's done quite a bit of sessions work, actually. Like, it's just that he doesn't really advertise it because his main gig is still Septic Flesh, you know?
True. But tell us about, like, getting a lead guitarist on this. And by the way, that's such a fucking killer video. Like, did you actually plan that out? Like the whole hair and bit and all?
No, that's all Nick. Nick, I think, so Nick posts a lot on this group that I'm part of, Technical Death Metal Sharing Group. And in fact, he had short hair when I first ran into him on that group. And then over like 3 years or 2 years, he grew his hair and then he bought a fan and all his videos, he had his fan. In fact, I think he just got the lighting set up before he shot that video because he doesn't like he was like, yeah, he was just like, okay, cool, I'll do the video. Because he does like normally his phone videos in his, you know, bedroom. And but it was like awesome that he did it. It just looked really cool.
I mean, I honestly thought that was like the whole marketing thing in there, right? Like, this is how we're going to kind of go for
No, that's all natural. That's all his personality there.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So since we're talking videos, right, I want to get into promotions and merchandise and that aspect of music as such, or the music business as such. Now, you've been someone who's been doing all of this collateral marketing or promotions as such for a really long time now. You had a podcast, you had a vlog, you've had your own forums. Everybody remembers and still appreciates, and I still welcome the emails, because it, frankly, and of course now on Twitter, like that's the only space where I'm getting my metal news as such these days. With this EP, is there anything new that you're trying out or that you've learned in terms of the promotion bit?
I mean, there's nothing new per se, but you know, I just hired a better PR company, or a bigger PR company rather, you know, not necessarily better or anything, but like definitely like a more well-known PR company to handle the PR for me. In terms of, you know, the visuals, I try and do a sort of playthrough video for every song. That's kind of been my signature thing, you know. Started that with the last Reptilian Warrior album, and it's I think that's going to continue basically with Demon Stealer, and that's kind of going to be the thing for Demon Stealer, is putting out a playthrough style video for every song that I have guest musicians on, or at least as many as possible, you know, from each release. And as always, you know, I try and get good artists to do the artwork and to make some unique merchandise where possible, and basically whatever's doable for me, I try and do, you know, to give people who are interested in the music a good kind of package that they can get.
But now, of course, like especially the last few years, you're getting a lot of data in return, right? So is there any startling data that you can share with us? Like, are people in Macau listening to your music?
No, I mean, same places. There's not been like I said, my growth has not been very like, so I can't really share any like, you know, crazy data, because my curve, like I told you, has kind of been like this only. So my data is pretty much the same as before, you know.
But I must add, I mean, while you're saying that, right, the merch is kind of cool, because I saw like a couple of days ago you posted the picture of the father and son wearing like your latest album, and that's cool, right? I mean, like,
dude, I was like, I just had a look, I was on your Bandcamp earlier, and I had a look at the international store. Fuck, like, you name the product, you've got it on there. Like, Gene Simmons ka store hai kya ye?
Or Gene Simmons, you want a yoga mat, Anumesh? This yoga mat also.
You just see the options. It's outstanding, and it's great that you're being able to do this. I really think that's awesome. And I forgot the question that I was going to go with.
So I'll ask that. So tell me about it. I mean, like, coming back to the father and son wearing your album artwork, right? Because I think that's really cool, and that's like awesome. I remember going to like international music festivals, and you know, you'd see like international bands have like kid sizes, and now, you know, you're doing it. But take us back at least the last couple of years that you've been doing a variety of merch. Has there been a moment where, you know, someone sent you a picture wearing your merch or using your merch? Like, I bought your coffee mug, I love that. But anything that makes you go like, wow?
Yeah, I mean, mostly it's like people sending me photos of them and their kids wearing the Demon Stealer merch, which is like, just wow, that's really epic. Like, I think it started with one of our fans, Jason. He's a DR fan as well. And he's like, you know, I'm having a kid. Do you have any like DR onesies? And I'm like, no, but, you know, let me just go on to, you know, these. So the beauty of technology and the internet is that now we have access to companies like Teespring, where all my merch is, which is a print on demand service, and they do merch and they're tied in with YouTube basically. So when you reach a certain level on YouTube, you can have something called a merchandise shelf below your channel. So if you come to my channel, you can see merch there, and all this merch is print on demand. So you place an order, they will then print it, and they will then send it to you. So I mean, while there are pros and cons of this, the fact is it allows people like me to put up merch at no investment, because if I had to do any of this stuff and print in bulk, none of this would exist. There would exist 200 or 250 t-shirts from small to 3XL, and that is it, you know, like we did it in the past. And now even with Red Wolf, they are able to do print on demand. So there's never a stress of like, I have to make so many t-shirts and sell so many t-shirts and I have to do any of this. It's like, I can put the merch up.
You know, this reminding me of Sahil. The days where your room used to be basically DR merch. Everywhere you looked was boxes of various kinds. Like, I'll never forget this, and this is a very distinct memory. You probably remember. I'd come over to your place, and I think this was the time I think it was Return to Darkness was releasing, and you and your friend was basically sitting and packing each of the orders to send out to everyone.
Oh, yeah. I had a whole street team, dude. Like I had 10 to 13 people who I would send boxes of 25 CDs to, and they would sell it for me in their city or whatever.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like everyone thinks like the glamour is like being a metal musician is glamorous and all. And then you kind of see you doing that.
I think if any of them have read my status messages in the last 20 years, they know that it's not glamorous. I think I've been more than vocal about that, you know?
I think everyone gets that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like those days as such in the scene when that reality of as such has been accepted by everyone who's stepping into this scene as such. Unless you're an absolute like new kid coming onto the block.
Yeah, and you learn it pretty quickly any which way now. Because I think, you know, back then I was one guy selling merch. Now every band is selling merch. And they know.
Yeah, everyone has it. It's so easy these days.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, you know, like.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah.
So wait, then I must... Sorry, I'm going to continue on this merch thing. What's one piece of merch Demonic Resurrection or Demon Sealer has not released as yet?
Swimsuits.
Yeah, we've not done swimsuits. We've not done underwear. We've not done bras. We've not done...
I meant like something that you wanted to do. If that's
vinyl. I mean, I don't know if vinyl counts as much, but I would love to have all my music available on vinyl for people. You know, like that would be really, really awesome. I mean, if you're talking about if you're talking about non like music merch, then I would love to have a Demonic Resurrection or a Demon Stealer coffee, like a signature coffee like Behemoth has, you know. Or even like pasta, like Flesh God Apocalypse has.
Oh, yeah.
Behemoth has coffee?
Behemoth has coffee.
Dude, everyone has coffee. Or go on.
I would love a beer also. A cider.
Yeah, the beers and the wines thing and all that I know of. But
yeah,
the coffee was okay.
Cool. Yeah, demonic tandoori masala we can start with.
Why not? Right? Sauce. Yeah. That'll be the hot sauce from India.
No need for hot sauce. I'm a spice host. So demonic tandoori masala or tikka masala.
See, if Exhumation was still around in honor of their track, could have like tandoori chicken.
Yeah. I think in their case, more like they'd actually bring a chicken out at the show and give like people after the song's over, yeah, like khao some tandoori chicken.
Massacres. Huh. So I remember the question that I wanted to ask you at that point in time. All the things that in terms of growth, in terms of, you know, getting more music out there, etc., all of that jazz, why not go the record label or the distribution label, that kind of a path now? Wouldn't it make things a bit easier? Or is there too much that you have to give up for that to happen?
The question is not whether or not I'll give up stuff. The question is who's going to sign me? The thing is, I'm still a nobody. Like I have like enough rejection emails or unreplied emails from many labels over the years. So I think I've just realized that it's better to do it myself right now because I don't fit with any label. Every label that I've written to has never replied or they're not interested and they've been very clear about that. So, you know, I mean, why waste my time and you know, like it's quite depressing to get a, you know, like a stream of rejection emails or not to get a reply at all, which is even worse. So I guess at some point it's just like, you know, I can do it on my own. As long as people pre-order, honestly, like for me, that's it. I want to reach a point where I can put out an EP or an album and I know I'll get at least $6,000-$8,000 worth of pre-orders so that my costs are covered and I can you know, do more on the next EP or the album. That's all I'd really like to achieve at this point to start with, you know?
Mm.
So, which kind of brings me to, I mean, and I don't know how much you can kind of disclose about this, but Demonic Resurrection at one point was on Candlelight, right? You had kind of licensed the album for a certain period of time. And then you finally got the rights back, right? And you put it up. Like, for our listeners who kind of don't get, you know, the whole thing being signed to a label versus being independent, what's the kind of difference you've seen, at least in streaming money, since then?
Money is terrible. See, look, there are pros and cons to labels. At the end of the day, a label is only as good as the amount of effort it invests in you. In terms of time, promotion, money. Sometimes you're a small band on a big label, it's no point. You could get signed to Nuclear Blast and you could be the lowest priority, which case you're probably better off being, you know, one of five bands on some small obscure label that's going to put in way more effort and time into you, reply to your mails and just push you as a band, you know. And like I was on Universal also, like for distribution and stuff. And I just realized, like, whatever like I'm doing there, like whatever I thought, whatever idea I had that a label can do for me as an artist, none of it happened.
Like, yeah, I was talking Candlelight. I completely forgot about Universal India. Yeah, you were actually on there.
Yeah, like honestly, Universal Music was, there was only one goal with that entire deal for me. Because it was like, for years, people have said, oh, I'm in this small town, I don't have cash. Some excuse or the other, Indian metalheads always made for why they can't buy albums or whatever. And Universal Music would take out the fact that, like, take out any excuse anyone had to buy it because it would be available everywhere. And that did not change the sales figures in any way. So it showed me that basically whether I'm on Universal, whether the album is available in shops or in online or whatever, this is the capacity of the Indian metal scene. Like, you are going to sell 1,000 CDs if you are lucky. That's it. It's not going to change. It's not like suddenly you'll sell 5,000 because the availability is there. No. The fact is, whether it's available or not, those who want to buy end up buying it.
Yeah. True. And also, it was, I think, at the time also where, like, CDs were, I mean, CD, how many, when was the last time, like, someone has actively bought more than 10, 12 CDs, right? So it was also at that time in there. Yeah. And streaming was just kind of getting in. I think, like, I remember using Spotify on a VPN. I think that was...
Yeah, but I think the number of people that are streaming then was really... I think it was pretty much torrents for everyone.
Like, yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay, cool. So as we begin to wind things down now, Sahil, I think this is a question that we've asked you earlier on your earlier appearances on the pod too, but... What keeps you going, man?
Music. It's the music itself. Like I said, I make the music for myself. I make the music because it makes me happy. I enjoy collaborating.
Isn't that enough?
No.
And why is it not enough?
Because, like I said, everyone who makes music, at the end of the day, they want people to listen to their music. As much as you make it for yourself, you do want an audience to listen to it. And when you put 21 years of your life into making that music, You want there to be something to show for it at the end of the day. Like, you know, I'm happy that I made the music. I'll never regret it. But at the same time, I'm never going to stop wanting more for my music. You know, it defeats the purpose for me then. It has to be both, you know. If I ever lose the love for making music, I'll stop. And then the other thing won't matter, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I want to ask you, and you've been quite... cryptic about this, so here's your time to spill the beans. And I'm on the page, so you can't lie and delete statuses, which says this is on the Demonic Resurrection group. It says, it's good to feel the sound of keyboards over heavy riffs. And this was a few days ago. And the one today, which is a few hours ago, says, you are not ready for what is coming. Extreme WTF reaction is expected. Come on, tell us.
So I can tell you that there is something brewing in Demonic Resurrection, and it's not more merchandise. it is actual music. Yes, you will hear new Demonic Resurrection music, and I'm expecting a lot of shock and confusion, and I'm just getting people ready to, like, brace
Come on.
For
let's what? Be honest, like I still remember listening to Dashavtar or the single from Dashavtar where you had the sitar, and I knew like the moment I heard that I was like, fuck, this is going to get like a lot of like what the fuck. So is it like on that scale of what the fuck, where would you place it?
No, I see the thing with Dashavtar was the what the fuck was very good. It was like, okay, what the fuck, that's awesome, dude, like sitar and metal, great.
It worked out really well. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm very proud of what we did on that album. But if anyone is expecting anything from Dashavtar to carry forward, whether it is the mythology or the Indian instruments or any of that stuff, they're in for a lot of disappointment.
Nice.
Because that chapter is shut for me, like completely. And I've said it on a few live streams and stuff as well. It must have been about five people who heard me say it. But yeah, that chapter is shut, and I don't think I will explore it anytime in the near future as well.
Cool. Alrighty then. We've kept you for almost an hour now. I think it's about time that we let you get back to your busy, hectic life.
And planning your next meal.
No,
I'm genuinely excited to hear about whatever's happening with DR. Yeah. And like, I hate to say it, but the respect thing is true, you know?
Yeah, I know it's true. Like, and it's okay. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. But like, it's just like me and Mephisto, like, it's great. Everyone respects it, but we just wish more people would listen to the music. Like, that's what's important. Like, they're okay if nobody respects us, but as long as they're listening to the music and they love the music, that's what matters, you know? Like, as a musician, you want people to hear the music. You want people to feel something when they hear it. You want that music to help them through tough times of their life. Basically, what you felt when you listened to your favorite bands, we want people who listen to our music to feel that. Like, a good example of what I dream of is like what you see in the Bloody Wood documentary. Like, that's my dream. If you have not seen that dream, any musician should be watching that documentary. Like, it was like, man, that is everything that I've worked 21 years for, but I know that I won't have it. And it's whatever it is, but I'm happy that they got to experience it, you know? Like, people coming to them, crying at their gigs and saying, your music saved me, having tattoos of them. Like, just the love, the support, like, it's unreal. Like, it is what every musician, and any musician who tells you they don't want that stuff is lying.
How many bands, how many people want tattoos, but yeah.
No, you imagine if your fan came to you and said, man, look, I tattooed your Horns Up logo of your podcast because that's what it means to me. Like, just hearing you guys have a casual conversation with my favorite musician and the way you guys like imagine that feedback you get. Like,
I wouldn't get
imagining it, but that's the thing, right? Like, we knew when we were getting into Horns Up that it's whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of an expectation wasn't even there. Yeah.
Okay, maybe with the podcast is different, but like, imagine some music.
Even musically, like, sure, I aspire for the Riot Peddlers and for like the bands that I play with to reach the moon. But at some level in my head, like, that expectation, or maybe it's just because that's how cynical I am with everything.
Yeah. No. So even I'm not saying I'm expecting this. I'm just saying, like, just seeing that, I'm like, wow, I would love that. Like, you know, like, that's where I would like to be. Like, imagine, like, yeah, you're not thinking it's possible because you've resigned yourself to, okay, cool, I'm in the Riot Peddlers. You know, this is how far I think we can go. Yeah, so even I know, like, okay, man, you know, I'm in DR or I'm Demon Stealer. I know how far I'm going to go. I'm never going to get that success that a Bloody Wood has. But it would be so awesome if I did. Like, just to, like, I can't even imagine what I would do, you know.
To some level, you do. Those kind of stories haven't been told, or maybe you haven't heard them.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, with DR, we've definitely had, you know, fans that have gone out of their way to do stuff to show us how much, you know, the music means to them. I'm not saying like we've never had any of that. But like, when you see it, and especially because Bloody Wood packaged it freaking well in that documentary.
Yeah, that they did. They did an outstanding job with that.
Yeah. So it hits you tenfold like that, you know. Like
I don't know if you've ever considered this or not, but maybe just a good manager that can try and make these things happen. Again, that kind of a magical figure exist?
No, man, because there's no money in what I do. And that's the thing, right? Like, with everything, if you look at with metal, the reason things don't exist is because there's no money. Yeah. Good managers who can take artists to the next level are there when there is money to put food on their plates. The reason none of the managers from the Indian metal scene are managing anyone anymore is because there's no money.
Correct.
You know, OML managed bands for a bit while they could. I mean, at some point you saw they even left the biggest bands because it's like, that's not enough money. That's not going to do anything, you know, when you're running a company. So I don't know if
well,
I don't
comedy
think,
happened.
Yeah. But they, I mean, even comedy, like comedy has potential.
It reached a saturation point, I'm guessing already.
Right? Yeah. At some point they'll move on to even bigger things. They might end up managing Bollywood people. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, everyone wants growth, right? Like, and look, I'm open to being managed if ever I have the opportunity and there's somebody who I think can take my music to the next level or who I can work with to do that, of course, I'll look at it.
So on that note, we've got new EP coming out in a month. You've got a Demon Stealer album coming out and well, I don't know.
Some DR stuff as well, yes.
Some DR, single.
Some DR stuff will come out. Some new guitar, if you'll hear something.
All right. So thanks, Al. It's always a pleasure talking.
No, thanks for having me. It's always my pleasure to be on the podcast.
And yeah, plug away, man.
you know what to do.
Just go for it.
Yeah, if you like the music I play, then go to demonstealer.bandcamp.com to pre-order your copy of the EP or go to redwolf.in/demonstealer if you live in India. Shipping is free on Red Wolf, so knock yourself out.
Oh yeah, you heard him right there. So why don't you do all that and then come back and tell us how much you liked this conversation or like Sahil's music, and just the next time you go up to him and meet him at a gig or wherever, just don't tell him respect, bro. Actually tell him that you heard his music and you liked it. Or maybe you didn't like it. He'll appreciate you telling it to him on his face. Definitely. Right? So why can you do that? You can do that by writing into us at hornsuppod.com, or you can find us on Twitter at hornsuppod. I'm on Twitter at Asmawani.
I'm at Trendcrusher.
Sahil, you're at?
At the Demon Stealer on Twitter.
Yep, reach him out there. Thanks, guys. Horns up.
Horns up.
Horns up.